Today's episode is sponsored by Herencia, Albuquerque's home for authentic Mexico City-inspired cuisine. Led by 2025 Chef of the Year Enrique Varavinos, Herencia serves bold flavor and heartfelt hospitality. They were also just voted Best New Restaurant in Albuquerque. Check out the menu at herenciaabq.com.
Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
Today on Table Talks, I'm joined by Karina Jones, a longtime leader in Yuma, Arizona, who's wrapping up 14 impactful years as executive director of the United Way. She's also deeply involved in ministry with her husband, Tyrone, at Church for the City, and they're raising two beautiful daughters, Mila and Aria. Stick around for a conversation on leadership, legacy, and faith in action. Well, welcome to this episode of Table Talks, and welcome, Karina. I am so excited to have you here with me today. I've really been looking forward to this for a while now.
I'm super excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's really my pleasure. And I just got to be with you a few weeks ago in Yuma, and I kind of feel like I've been there several times now, and I really do feel like it's coming home. I just love your church and the people and the leadership of your family and your father-in-law and his whole family. And I love them all. I like Lady V, your mother-in-law. They're just all precious people. So love your family and glad you're here. But tell us a little bit about, so you have an amazing husband and a couple of daughters that I talked about in the intro, but tell us about your family.
Yeah. So December 10th of this year, we'll be married 14 years. So I'm married to Tyrone. We have just had so much fun together. We have two daughters. One is 9 and the other one is 11. She's about to go into junior high. So definitely an interesting season for us. You know, we are just girl, mom, and dad, and we just absolutely love it.
I love that. Your father-in-law's Tyrone also. So
yeah, big Tyrone, little Tyrone.
Yeah. So little Tyrone, your husband. Are they still coaching football? Do they coach in Yuma still at all?
Yeah. No, this is the first season where neither one of them are coaching at all. So they kind of stepped down, but we're very much football people. So actually this Friday there is a game. So we love Friday Night Lights and just visiting the high schools and we love it.
I love that I have that so in common with your husband and your father-in-law. And every time I'm around them, we just talk football. And I really do love that. It's my favorite time of year. And I love this season. I love football. I love fall. I love winter. I love Christmas. So this is my time.
Me too, except I went to ASU, so I am go Sun Devils, and you are not an ASU fan. So, I mean, I love you, but we disagree.
I'm not an Arizona Cardinal fan, and I'm not a Las Vegas Raider fan. And
glad neither one of the Tyrones are here. I think I'm a Raiders fan by default because they are big Raiders fans, but yeah, it's a good time.
But it's just fun. I love a good competitive football game. So before we dive into all things leadership, I want to talk about you've been such a big part of Yuma. You are a huge part of the city of Yuma. So were you always a Yuma girl? Were you born and raised there?
Yeah, so I wasn't born here, but I was raised here. We moved here when I was really young, and the only time that I've moved away is to attend ASU. So I was there for about 3 years, and then Tyrone and I got engaged while we were both living in Tempe, and then straight after we both graduated, we moved back down. So I am a Yuma girl through and through.
It's fun, isn't it, to be somewhere your whole adult life anyway, because you settle in roots and you kind of feel a part of the fabric of the city, which you told us a little about your daughters and your husband. So your mom and dad used to live there and they moved away recently, but you've got a lot of other family through Tyrone's family, other family.
Yeah, we've got a lot of family here, and we just say that it's home, right? So even though we both moved away, we were debating on whether or not we were going to come back, but we just felt the Lord really was calling us back home, and we came back home, and we've had opportunities to move, but we're like, no, Yuma's home, and this is where we feel like we're called to be. And I always say, I don't know if I would have this job, the specific role that I'm in. I don't know if I would want it in another city. I very much love the size of our town. It's not too small. It's not too big. We're right on the border. You know, Phoenix is a few hours away. San Diego's a few hours away. So Yuma's home.
We've known your family. I love your city. I really do. I love that it's close to all that too. Mm-hmm. And our family has been, we've known your family for, I think maybe 6 years. You're really close to our son, Dustin, and his wife, Mandy. Mm-hmm. You guys just hang out when you get a chance all the time. And I think that's wonderful. So we're friends. We got to be friends by default because, you know, we're the old parents, but we love you guys.
Yeah, but you're the cool parents.
Well, maybe. I hope so. I sure love be hanging out with you guys. So I think what I've always been drawn to your family and you. You have such an amazing influence over so many people. Your influence for Next Generation is pretty remarkable. Watching you with Next Gen, how much they look up to you and admire you. And so you've been in ministry. Your husband's been in ministry for almost a decade or close mm-hmm. to that now. And you've been around it so much. But you have had a job for 13 or 14 years with the United Way of Yuma. And I think that was what drew me so much to know your story and how you're such a leader in the community. You do things that I know there's people in your church that have, some of them have no idea what you do outside the church, like how successful of a businesswoman you have really been over the last, you know, decade and a half. And so you lead, I won't say the church is not the real world, but it's a church world. And then there's the other world. And so you've had a foot in both lanes. Mm-hmm. You've been in both lanes for a long time. So tell me a little bit, how did you get connected with the United Way? So you've been executive director there. Let me say this, and I said it in your intro, but for 14 years?
Well, no, I started off first as the resource development director, but I've been in this role as of executive director for almost 7 years.
7 years. So you started 14 years ago or something like that. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's close. Just roll with me. I'm 65.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever I say. So tell us about how you started there. How did you find that job?
Yeah. So we moved back down and it was actually by way of relationship that my mom had. She was good friends with another executive director in town of a different local nonprofit. And I happened to be in the room when they were planning something. My mom was on their board and different committees that they were involved in. And she knew that I had moved down. My degree is in tourism development and management. So not anything necessarily related to nonprofit, but we were newlyweds and I needed a job. And I read the job description. She thought that I would be a good fit. She knew that I had grown up here, I had a good network and some good personal relationships. So she encouraged me to apply and I applied and I've been there ever since.
It's interesting how you have a plan to go one direction and then God takes you a whole different direction, even though all the experiences you got in college and learning what you learned. I think you're great at tourism, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You took me on a little tour when I was there a few weeks ago. So we had a good time.
Yeah. I still use some of what I learned.
So, I mean, you talked about your first role. Did you ever imagine when you started working there? I mean, you had an executive director at United Way. Did you ever imagine that could be you one day? Or did you think that in the back of your mind? Or you thought, I'm just here biding my time until I go into tourism?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't. I just thought like, okay, this is a role that I feel like I'm pretty decent at. And I didn't even have those thoughts of like, what is my next step? Or maybe I could step into the role of executive director. That wasn't even on my radar. Now, I will say about 4 or 5 years in, that is probably when Tyrone also started to get more involved in the church and I did as well. So then I did start to have those thoughts, right? Like, okay, what are next steps going to look like? What does growth look like for me in the career world? And then I did start to have the thoughts of, could I eventually step into this role? And eventually the executive director did end up, you know, announcing her retirement and I was able to step in.
What were those early years like when you became executive director? Because it's great that you're a part of the team and you take that role, but it's also has a different, another side when you're a part of the team and you take the role, because then people that were your peers are now working for you.
Yeah,
So that's a different thing too.
So it was a huge shift in dynamic, right? Because you're going from peer to now an authority figure. And early on, we had to make some pretty difficult decisions. Like one of the decisions, because we weren't financially stable, I had to eventually end up letting somebody go. And it had nothing to do with performance, it had nothing to do personal reason, nothing like that. It was strictly on a budget and it was what was good for the organization. So that was something that was really difficult early on, but I had a good board that was supporting me and walked me through that decision. But those aren't the things that you think about when you first get into a leadership role, right? Like you're not having to think like, man, I may have to make some decisions that are for the good of the organization, because ultimately it falls on you to keep it going. So when I had to make that decision, it was really difficult. Now, I will say it was also really fun on the other end, because we got to experiment. I had a lot of energy coming in. I was young. We had a solid team behind us. So it was an interesting season for sure for starting out.
Well, you're still very young in my book.
Younger.
You know, it's interesting. You're talking about, you know, going in, and I'm sure when you, because I've been in the position that we've not been the leader and we've been on staff like a church, and you're watching the leader work and you're thinking, oh, I would do it different. If I had my chance, I would do it this way. And I was talking to both Dustin and Brandon recently, our sons, and they said, you know, one thing they didn't know is being a senior leader is very different than they had imagined it to be. And you probably would agree, when you've been on the team and you become senior leader, all of a sudden, when the buck stops with you, all the great ideas you had, you're thinking, okay, you know, when it all changes, right?
Yeah, it all changes. And what people don't realize is you're dealing with people's livelihood here, right? Like beyond me on having the ministry side too, is I'm not just leading an organization, I'm leading people, and people have personal lives that bleed into the workplace. And when you're talking about somebody's livelihood, it carries a different weight. And when you're not in that seat, it's hard to envision that.
That's so true. So tell me some of what a United Way does. You're about to have your big annual fundraiser. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of funds, and I think that's wonderful. But what are those funds for? What do you do? What does your organization, your nonprofit, do?
Yeah, so every United Way is different. We are 100% local. So you may talk to another United Way and they may say that they're doing something completely different. We here in Yuma focus on giving kids tools they can use to break the cycle of poverty. So that may look like a pair of glasses to help with health, right? And making sure that they have good access to quality health care. Sometimes it might look like giving them a financial education class and teaching them about what finances is, how to balance a checkbook. We don't have to write physical checks very often, but you still need to know how much is in your bank account. And then sometimes it's just about meeting a basic need. So we do a big backpack drive. We give school supplies to different classrooms. We give coats away, because sometimes it's just a basic need that needs to be met. We're not under the impression that that's going to be what's going to break the cycle of poverty, but you'd be surprised at how much of a difference when a kid walks in with a new jacket or with a new school supply and they're on equal playing ground with the rest of the kids, what it does for their confidence, what it does for their performance in school. And that's what we're really trying to give these kids.
That's amazing. And that's, it's so fulfilling every day. I mean, you have all the struggles of making sure the money's there and reaching the budgets, because we're only limited by the amount of money we have. I mean, we say that as a church too. We're only, you know, we're at, can only give as much as the money that comes in. You know, we can only be as generous as other people are generous. Right. And so you carry that weight for United Way, you know, thinking all these people are asking for something. I would think in your city, you get a lot of requests and you want to fill them all, but you have to raise these funds. You have to be able to make sure it's coming in. So as executive director, what is your specific role with United Way, Yuma?
Yes. So as executive director, I'm really the one that's casting vision, right? And I'm pushing the mission forward. I'm building partnerships. I'm that face that's out there that people can recognize. Okay, Karina is with United Way. Now, I also have a unique role because our organization is pretty small. So we have a board of 11, and then we have 3 full-time staff members. So as a smaller organization, I'm also involved in a lot of the hands-on and day-to-day tasks. So even though I am managing and overseeing the finances, I'm also involved with some of that day-to-day stuff that it comes with, planning events, writing grants, and everything that needs to happen and make sure that the office is going in the right direction.
That's a lot of, writing grants is hard. That's just like, that could be a full-time job.
Yeah.
You could have someone just writing for grants all the time. I notice it's that way at church too. If we're, you know, if we're looking for something, it's not easy. You have to have a lot of training, I feel, to write for a grant specifically. That's pretty amazing. And it is different because I know United Way. We've all heard of it. Everybody, we're so familiar with the term, but I love that we're, you know, get to learn a little bit about what United Way Yuma does. So like, you deal with a lot of different kinds of people that I know. You have the 3 employees, but 11 board members that are probably all from very different walks of life. Yeah. And you go out into your community where you all may think different, act different, you're from different socioeconomic backgrounds, you were raised different. And so tell me a little bit about key things that you've learned about people who may not think like you, because, you know, in this culture we live in now, we just regurgitate everything we think on social media and we think we can change the world like that. Yeah. And I feel like I have learned that people change more quickly, or I have more influence if I live my life a different way in front of them. So how do you deal with people? What are lessons you've learned dealing with people that are not like you?
Well, teaching people how to think is one of the greatest challenges in leadership, right? I can teach somebody how to do all day. Like, I can give you a task list and I can show you how to move through your task list, but really teaching somebody how to think and process is what's going to increase somebody's capacity. And that happens on an ongoing basis. We're having a lot of conversations with the board, with the staff. We're processing together. So we have a big annual event coming up and I'm, you know, eventually transitioning out. So I am asking a lot of questions. We'll go through the event. We'll lay out the event from start to finish. And I'll allow that other person to go through and say everything that they need to say. And then I'll come in on the back end and ask questions. Did you think about this? Well, what about that? Because then it gets their wheels turning like, oh, shoot, I didn't think about it. And here's the thing about people who think differently. I don't think it's a bad thing. You have to look at it as a strength, because I don't want to be surrounded by people who think like me all the time, because then we're going to make the same mistakes all the time. So if I can have somebody who doesn't think like me, who can see through a different lens, but at the same time, I can teach them how to think about the right things and how to process, then that's when real change starts to come in.
That's really good. I mean, that right there, if people can just wrap their brain, me included, around that, to understand that, you know, you basically want to attract people that have different strengths than you have. And because if they have a different strength, their weakness is going to be different, and you're going to meet each other in the middle and get the desired result that you're trying to get.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're talking people's lives to every day, in either capacity you're in, whether you're at United Way or you're, you know, we're helping for years, you guys were the youth pastors also at Church for the City in Yuma, where you're on staff. And either way, you're helping, people's lives are in your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the next generation, teaching them how to think is challenging, because with all of AI coming out and just the accessibility that we have to information, it's amazing. But a lot of technology is now thinking for us. So we've got to almost go a little bit in reverse and teach people again how to relearn some certain things instead of just going to Google or AI for the answer. All those things are wonderful. I think they're tools and good resources to use that I use often, but it has to start with me.
Because it's interesting with algorithms on our phones or on social media, but also with AI, they get to know you and they say what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. The AI, ChatGPT, tells me how wonderful I am all the time. I'm like, you know, I really am, actually. It's the only one that tells me this every single time I come on here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, she goes, perfect, great idea. I'm thinking, why does anybody else tell me this? But ChatGPT learns us and they say what we want to hear. So you can't take that to the bank, just like our algorithms on social media. If one time we look at something and then here comes every reel known to man, that comes up saying that, you know, with the same stuff. So if we get our news on social media, we see the same news every day. If we get our fashion, if we look up two outfits, then every outfit that comes, I'm like, hey, this really knows me. But, you know, it doesn't. It just knows I've looked at those two stores or those outfits. So then every time I go on, here comes these same outfits or whatever. And you're so right in what you're saying. I love that, because we have to go backward a little bit and say, what I'm using this, you know, so much, or I'm on my phone, and I work on my phone for hours all day. I rarely take my laptop. So I'm working on my phone, and it tells me what I want to hear and what I look for. And that's a dangerous place to be as a leader, for sure. I mean, anyone, but as a leader, only having these artificial intelligence things telling us what we want to hear. So getting real life humans around us.
Yeah. That's the key, is getting people around you, right? And that's the strength of people who don't think like you, because they are going to challenge you. But if you can look at those challenges as not negative things and really take them in and be like, okay, I didn't think about what you just said. Let me try to reframe what I'm thinking. Or maybe they have better ideas than you, but you're not going to get that through AI. You're just going to get that through face-to-face contact.
That's so good. And that's you know, one of my favorite groups to hang out with are this group of about eight young ladies. They're in their 20s. And I know I drive them nuts, because they drive me nuts sometimes, but I love being around them because they think so differently than I do. Mm-hmm. I love to be in their presence, because I just, you know, all this time I think I'm going to teach them something, but the whole time they've taught me something, a lot of somethings in a different frame of reference. And I love that we you know, unpack this a little bit, because it's okay. I really get tired of people trying to change everybody to be just like them.
Right.
However that is, because it's okay. I mean, we have a standard we live by, and I'm not, you know, minimizing any of that, but it's okay to have a lot of different people around you. I think it makes us better and smarter, like you've been saying. And, it's just the right thing to do. I mean, Jesus himself did that. Not everybody around him was exactly the same, different backgrounds, different walks of life, and they all had impact on each other. I believe that. So, wow, that was great. I love that. And you mentioned, you know, one of the hardest things you had to do in the beginning as executive director was to, you know, let someone go. Mm-hmm. I always will say to my husband when he was pastor, I'll say, oh, I don't think they should work here anymore. You should let them go until you're the one having to do it. It's horrible.
Exactly.
Besides that, what's one of the hardest things that you've, or decisions you've had to make as a leader?
Yeah, I think it had to be not to fund certain programs that didn't align with my personal values, right? We get a lot of requests from different programs or different organizations asking for money or wanting to do a certain partnership. And there just have had to be times where I've said no. And, you know, we alluded to earlier, you can only do so much. Like I'm a nonprofit, so I heavily rely on donations and grants and different streams of revenue. So to say no to money, that's really where the faith comes in. Like, okay, Lord, I'm going to align with my values and say no to this, and trust that you're going to provide in another way.
Because that means if you said yes to an organization wanting to give money to that, that means you're saying yes.
Exactly.
To everything that goes with that money.
Right. Exactly. Like,
I just, you know, there's, you have to be a place to draw the line. That's a hard thing. And I know I'm sure the new director that's going to come in will be amazing, but that's, you have, you're such strong values. I know that you will be hard to replace for sure. But in that position, being the top of the leadership position in an organization, I'm sure there's been conflict and there's been, you know, criticism maybe you've had to handle. How do you handle that? How do you handle conflict or criticism? Quick shout out to today's featured sponsor, Flowers by Zach Lowe, Albuquerque's family-owned florist since 1993, creating fresh, beautiful arrangements at affordable prices with unmatched customer service. Order online and support local at flowersbyzachlowe.com. Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way for people to find the podcast and to be encouraged. Now, back to the conversation.
You Yeah, so conflict is inevitable in whatever position that you're going to be in, or whether you are at the top or you are a part of a team. But I think coming from a leadership perspective, I've got to make sure that I'm making enough deposits in people all throughout the day, all throughout the week. So then when there is conflict and I have to make a withdrawal, they know without a doubt that I care for them, that I'm coming from a good place, and it's not going to damage our relationship. But they don't know those things unless I'm working on that and being very intentional on working on that all of the other times that there isn't conflict. So you've got to make sure that you're making enough deposits on in your team so that when that conflict does arise, it's a much easier conversation. I don't like conflict. I don't like to have to sit down and work through it, but it's so much easier when I know, all right, my heart's in the right place. I know where their heart is. Let's just get through this.
So tell me, when you talk about making deposits all the time, so give us examples. Tell us, so people listening, they hear it and they go, oh, yeah. But give them some practical deposits you would make in someone's life.
Yeah. So I think it's different with everybody. I like to know everybody's love language, and I like to know what their Enneagram is. Their love language, I ask everybody on my board and everybody on this staff to either take the love language test, or if they've already taken it, to tell me it. Because everybody likes to be appreciated in a different way. And as a leader, I need to know that. There are some people, if your love language is words of affirmation, I'm going to make sure that weekly I am affirming you and telling you, you did such a great job. I'm sending you a text outside of the workplace one-on-one, and I'm making that deposit with you verbally. Some people are physical touch. They want to be hugged and say, this is how I want to be appreciated. Other people like gifts, and it doesn't have to be extravagant gifts, but maybe you're just dropping by. And if it's a board member, I will send flowers to one specific board member because their love language is gifts. Just say, I appreciate what you're doing, thinking about you. Please have a good day. So it just varies on the person, and you've just got to learn to figure out how everybody wants to be appreciated.
That's so good. And it's so intentional. Mm-hmm. Any relationship we're in, whether it's work or, parenting or marriage, those relationships, if they're intentional, we can do so much better with them. I'm thinking when you're talking about all that, about being a parent too, and working with our children, whether they're toddlers or teenagers or grown children, if you've made deposits and you've been, like you said, knowing their love language and you know how they, like to be affirmed.
Yep.
And you're making those deposits all the time. When you have to have the hard talk, even though it's not fun and it is a real hard thing to do, you feel like I'm in the right place. I have made great deposits in their life. I'm their cheerleader. I've done everything I need to do. So if I have to say, we can't do that again, or you can't do that, they can take it a little bit better. That is a really important fact that I hope people are grasping. And a lot of people say, well, I just go to work and then I keep my head down and I go home. And we might say that, but that is not the reality. There's still relationships. If you go to a workplace, if you're work from home, maybe that's different. But if you're going to an environment where there are other people, it's really important to learn how to have a relationship with someone that you're seeing every day.
Yeah, for sure. And then I even think there's even the other side of it too, of I try to take as much responsibility as I can if I'm dealing with a conflict or if I'm having an issue with somebody. Because when you have a conflict with somebody, when you have that conversation, you're hoping that they're taking responsibility for their part, right? Well, I've got to first start off by saying, what could I have done differently? Can I do a self-reflection first before I have a conversation with them? Because then if you open that conversation with them by initially taking responsibility, I can't have the expectation for somebody to take responsibility if I'm not willing to first. So if I can start it off by saying, look, this is how I could have handled this differently, you're more likely to get the result that you want from that other person because now you're on the same level and you're on the same ground.
That's so good. Just really good information. And I think so specific to people that are listening, because I don't think personal relationship skills are, I don't know how they were ever taught or if they were taught, but I think because we're so much we don't talk face to face as much as we did years ago, everything's text or email or whatever, that people have lost the art.
Yes.
To communicating, but also to say, what's my responsibility in this? And culturally, right now, we're basically taught nothing's my fault. Mm-hmm. Nothing's my responsibility. Everything's done to me. Yeah. And I think that what you just said is such gold that before I walk in, I feel convicted about that. Before I go into something I know is going to be could be challenging if I said, what could I have done different? And a lot of the times there is something.
Yeah, there's always something.
Way I say, especially in a marriage, you know, in a marriage, I think about that right away. We've been married just almost 45 years. And, you know, I mean, I'm right, basically 95%.
Yeah, same. Right, exactly. There's just small,
the
you
other
know,
5%. Small percentage. Yeah, that small little percent, I think back, well, you know, what could I have done differently? That one thing. I know. And my husband was in this room a little while ago before we started. If he was standing here right now, he'd be rolling his eyes for sure. So what you talked about, and I think we've already answered this question, but you talked about some of the people that are companies that want to get behind or be a partner with United Way. You've had to say no because of your values. Has there been in any other situations? Because you're a born again believer. Yeah. You love Jesus with all your heart. And so you're, you know, mostly not conflicted because you're raising money to help people have equity.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's been a time or two.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if there's been a lot of other big decisions that I've had to make, but I do know that on a daily basis for me, I have to really think, okay, people over productivity, right? Like I'm called to help disciple people and lead people to Jesus. And if I am just lead with an iron fist and I am not a nice leader, or I'm just solely focused on what's best for the organization and not actually caring about people, then I've missed the mark. So for me, it's value driven every day. I'm thinking about people over productivity. And then that's where the faith comes in trusting the Lord. Like, okay, Lord, I am doing what you've called me to do. And I believe that you will take care of the productivity on the other side.
That's so good. It's really, I mean, you're such an amazing, honestly, you're a great leader. And that's why I wanted to talk with you. It's crazy. So I mentioned that you've been you've been running two lanes for a long time. Mm-hmm. And really involved at your family's church that your father-in-law planted. It's called Church for the City in Yuma. It's just it's really growing and thriving, packed. All your services, it's crazy, but it's as hard and fast as you run at United Way. You've been running just that hard, you know, because you guys for years were youth pastors, which is a very time consuming job. So how in the world have you been so involved in both areas of your life and been able to manage this all this time?
Yeah. Well, one, I think it's just been my perspective. Instead of seeing it as running in two different lanes or two different worlds, it's one world for me. And United Way and the church coexist in that world. A lot of times when you have somebody talking on the, you know, full-time ministry side, you say like, oh, they're bivocational because they don't work at the church. Well, I've learned to use the phrase co-vocational instead of bivocational, because what I'm doing at United Way and in the marketplace is not a means to an end, or it's not just a form where I'm helping financially support my family. I believe that everything that I'm doing at United Way benefits my work at the church, and vice versa. Everything that I'm learning at the church also benefits what I'm doing at United Way. I'm just, at least for this past 14-year season, have been called to do my ministry in the sphere of the marketplace and at United Way. And now I just see every single day now, especially in the role that I'm about to step into, how much that is, you know, coinciding. Now on the practical side, it takes a lot of communication. I mean, Tyrone and I, every single week, we're sitting down together and saying, okay, what does your week look like? What does your day look like? How can I help you? And vice versa. It's a mutual releasing that happens, right, with Tyrone. He believes in the work that I'm doing and that it's important. And I believe in the work that he's doing. And it's equally as important. So when we talk about who's going to pick up the girls or who's going to do dishes or who's going to cook dinner, we're really working together at it. And it doesn't just fall on one person.
I think that's really an important point you're bringing up, because a lot of people that listen, a lot of them are Christians, and so they have a job that's not at the church, because the church is mainly run by volunteers. There's a small staff to a million volunteers. So I see a lot of, especially young adults, they give so much time at the church and they feel conflicted just with their time. They go to this 40-hour a week job and then they're at the church all the time. But I love what you're saying, that they can coexist, they can be together, and they don't need to fight each other. It might take some managing of time. But you don't have to say, in order for me to do full-time ministry, I have to give up this job necessarily. All these, you know, I'm thinking of so many young adults that would love to be at the church 24/7, but everybody can't work there. And we need some people to have a job, you know, that makes money. That's
Yes.
a good thing too. But I love that you do both. I always had a business out. My husband, we've been in ministry 45 years and we were lead pastors for 28, but I had a multi-million dollar business outside of that all those years, which is crazy to me, but they existed together and I never missed anything. And they both fed each other. And I love that, you've had that experience too, that
Yeah.
do both.
Yeah. And the church has done such a good job now. Ministry, at least for me when I was growing up, didn't really look attractive. I also didn't grow up in a family who's in ministry. I grew up with parents, they are first generation college graduates. They came over from Mexico and they immediately went to work and they retired from the public education system. So education for me was like, that's the route that I'm going to take. And I don't think ministry was very attractive growing up, but now it's fabulous, right? Like ministry is so attractive to young adults and our youth students, and everybody's like, I want to do full-time ministry. But there is a responsibility on us who are in ministry and leading and teaching them, well, full-time ministry doesn't mean you have to be full-time at the church. You can do full-time ministry at your job. You can lead people in whatever, in a coffee shop, in the business place, wherever you're at, you can lead people. So we've got to also shift that mindset from the young adults and the people who are, considering doing that. And also we've got to come back to calling. Like, where are you called to? Not everyone is called to work at the church full time. We need people out in the marketplace reaching the lost. As churchy as that sounds, that's what it really comes down to.
It really does. And I think the church these days has done such a better job utilizing people in the church, because for years, just a pastor and the two staff members, they did church. They did all mm-hmm. They took mm-hmm. the sick. Mm-hmm. They went to see people in the hospital. They did all the teaching
yep.
Sundays, and they led every group and small group. And
right.
And love the shift over the last couple of decades, especially the last decade, and giving ministry to people that come to church, so that we all see that we're all ministers, no matter if we have the title,
mm-hmm.
the pay that goes with the title, whatever we do, whether I'm a teenager, I'm a young adult, or I'm in the workforce, or I'm retired, that I'm still in ministry, whether I have a pastor title or not, which I think is a great point that you're making. And you've done it for a long time, which brings me to my next point. 14 years is a long time to be someplace. And you and I talked about this in person when I was there just a few weeks ago. And I think I feel it for you more than you feel it for yourself right now, because I've walked through a transition in the last few years. But longevity and letting go is it's so much good. I mean, I'm sure it's just, you see the good and then you're nervous too, because you've done this so long. So you made a decision in the last year to step down from being executive director at United Way. And because your husband's kind of taken a different role at Church for the City, he's moving into more an executive pastor role, and you guys are making some shifts and changes, and you wanted to be able to take all this skill
yeah.
that you've fine-tuned over the last, decade and a half, and bring them to the church. And so I think that's so amazing. So what does this look like for you? I mean, I know that you've got this, so you're busy right now
mm-hmm.
getting ready for this fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Then the end of the year is going to come. So I just want to know all your feelings in 5 minutes, please.
Yeah, I am going through all the emotions. I feel like I'm a roller coaster, right? On some days I'm super excited, like, oh, this is so great, I can't wait. And then in other days I'm like, did I make the right decision? Did I actually hear the voice of the Lord? Like, am I supposed to be transitioning out? I mean, at the end of the day, I absolutely feel confident in the decision that we've made, but it's bittersweet. I haven't built this organization. It's been a team, it's a board, it's the staff and different donors and community members that have come alongside us. And I've always tried to hold United Way with an open hand. Like, this is just mine to steward for as long as God has called me to do, and as long as he has provided the grace to do. It was a weekly prayer, like, Lord, give me the grace to lead and only operate in the areas that you've called me to do. And the moment that I don't feel that, and I started to feel it a few years ago, then, okay, I think the grace is lifting and it's starting to shift. Now, there was a lot of different decisions and a lot of different factors that went into that final decision. But I think I'm a little all over the place, if I'm being completely transparent. It's a lot.
It really is. And I mean, because you're ending a chapter, you're starting a chapter. So there's everything you've known, and now you know, things that you don't know. And so how did you know this was the time? How did you know, hey, the end of 2025 is the time that I stepped down? What was that thing?
So I think it was just a few confirmations. The board was okay with me making that because we had already started to have those, like some of them were terming off. The ones that really came on with me said like, all right, we're about to term off. And I think I want to term off with you. I went to the Lord in prayer. Tyrone and I were on the same page. And then we really sought counsel from our mentors or people that we've allowed to have a voice in our life. And they agreed like, yep, it's time for you. And that was a really important big thing for us, that we had to consult with people who aren't in the day-to-day grind and say, this is what we're feeling. Do you think this is a wise decision for our family? Ari's about to go into junior high. Mila's getting close. When the kids are young, it's easy for you to just drag them along, right? Like, hey, we're going to church or we're doing this. Now they're getting to a season and an age where I want to be a little bit more present and not have to feel so rushed all the time or having to carry the weight from the church and from United Way and just be a little bit more available to them. So all of those together led us to this decision.
I think that's, I mean, you sought wise counsel. That's something that I hope people really grasp when you just said that, because a lot of times when people are facing a big decision and they feel like maybe God is, you know, speaking, by God speaking, I mean that they you feel a nudge. You know, if you're a Christian, the Holy Spirit lives in you and you start to feel that nudge that something's shifting. And not only did you seek wise counsel, you listened to them. I found in my years of being a pastor in ministry and now watching my sons, people a lot of times will book a meeting for counsel and they have no, they're not going to seek counsel. They're just there to tell you what they're going to do under the premise that I'm here for, you know, wisdom. And they've made up their mind. They're really not there to get your input. So I think what that point that you made is so important when you have a big decision to really seek counsel and say, you said from someone that's not in it with you all the time, to be able to look from outside and say, you know, and you, I don't think that's good. Or obviously you had people around saying, I think this is it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen just too often, especially leading young people, I think there are people, and I've seen it, who miss opportunities and miss blessings simply because they've left too early. They've left their position too early, or they've left in the room and they've allowed themselves to be led by emotion. And that was just something that I really didn't want to do. I didn't want to do it just because I'm tired or just because things were getting a little bit harder. I didn't want to miss that opportunity because we see it time and time again. A young person might see something that looks a little bit more attractive or easier and they leave and they have no idea what was on the other side if they would have just stuck it out.
That's just a... It's so much wisdom. I want someone right now, if they're listening, just to rewind that. Go back 30 seconds and listen to all that again, because it's so true. And there are people in your life that can help you to know if this is the, you know, wait. I tell people all the time, I have not ever seen someone miss something because they waited versus rushing. Because God's not, you know, he's not wringing his hands hoping that, you know, because God would have had grace for you if you'd have waited another year.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. That's what I tell people. You're never in a rush. And if someone's pushing you in a decision, this is totally off the subject with you, but I feel led to say it. If you're listening and you're feeling pushed in a decision, God is not a pushy God. He doesn't do that to us. He leads and gently guides us and leads us. He doesn't push us. So if you ever feel pushed, I think you can stop a minute and go, I'm going to sit on this a little bit and see what God really wants. And then you'll also, there's times when you feel the leading that it's the time. And the way you know God's voice is the more you listen to it, the more you're in his word, the more you're, you know, listening to worship music, the more you're studying and around the word of God, then the easier it is to hear from God and to make that decision a little, you know, and you're not so nervous about it. You don't recognize voices that you don't hear very often.
Right.
You know, someone calls and you know their voice, you know exactly who it is. But if someone calls, I'm going, I'm sorry, who is this again? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to have that relationship with God that we don't know his voice because we never talk to him. I guess that's a podcast.
Yeah.
I guess that's another one. So what's next for you? What are you dreaming about? What's going to happen in this new season?
Yeah, well, I think that's to be determined, right? And that's the scary part is I don't know exactly what either of us are walking into, both for Tyrone, both for myself. We're kind of going into this season and saying, okay, Lord, we're following you. I know that I'm going to be doing some community impact stuff at the church, which I absolutely love. So I'm not necessarily being pulled away from community. I'm just able to do it under the banner of the church. So everything that I've learned, all of the relationships that I've been able to establish, I get to go over to the church and leverage those relationships in a good way. And it's not like I'm starting all over again. I'm just, again, switching the sphere that I'm going to every single day or switching the space that I'm going to every day. So I'm excited. I'm also excited about going from being a fundraiser to a funder. You know, the church supports a lot of different programs in town. So I will say I'm eager to take a little break from having to be the one who fundraises the money to now being able to fund and be on the other side and still support a lot of the programs that are in town.
It's so awesome. And you're going to have such a great perspective because you will have done, you've been on the other side too.
Yep.
You're going to have so much to bring to the table. And I feel like for Church for the City, your church there in Yuma, that it's just going to, you know, take it to another level because they're, although they're doing things like that now, you're going to bring a lot of experience to that ministry that maybe, you know, has been there before, but you're going to have a different view. Than someone else that may have had. So we talk about young leaders a lot because I think we're both drawn to the next gen. And I've watched you mentor and you pour into next generation. I think that's why one of the reasons you're such a successful leader is because you don't hold it in for you. You really want someone to learn from things you've learned. So what is one thing you wish that young leaders knew today?
That you don't have to wait for a title or a specific vision to start, or I'm sorry, a specific position to start leading. You can lead exactly where you're at, regardless of the position that you're in. We all have different levels of influence, and we all have different people who are around us. And you can be a leader in your friend group. You can be a leader at work. You can really start leading now so that people who are in a position of leadership, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a person who can actually start leading without being given a title, who can start taking initiative on things without having to be told. So I wish more young people weren't so stuck on position or waiting for something specific and just started doing.
That's so good. So good. What's another quick question, because our time goes by so quickly. What is the best advice someone ever gave you about anything?
Probably that I didn't have to know everything. I think when you're young, you feel a lot of pressure to perform and be at a certain level. I know when I was really young, my board, there's people that have a lot of big positions. I have an attorney. There is a person who owns an investment firm. There's the director of the airport. There's all these different people. So you walk into this room and it's pretty intimidating. But I wish I would have known more early on. I don't have to have all of the answers. I can walk in and I don't know, but I will figure that out. Or I'm not sure, let me get back to you, are okay decisions. And being able to surround yourself with people who are ahead of you, people who know more, that's an asset. And it's not always a negative thing, you know, to be perceived that way.
So good. That's so good. I got to meet a couple of those people you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're just great people, but they carry themselves so strongly. I can see how mm-hmm. a younger version of you would be like, okay, mm-hmm. that's just a great, great, great advice. I have one last question or statement for you. I thought this might be fun. So I want you to finish this sentence. The best kind of leader is someone who...
The best kind of leader is someone who allows themselves to be led. I think no matter how long you've been in leadership, no matter where you're at, you always have to continue to be led by someone. There's always accountability in place. There's always someone who has been doing it longer than you. The moment you think that you've arrived, that's the problem. I never want to be a leader who stops learning. I never want to be a leader who positions themselves outside of authority. So I think no matter what, as a leader, you always have to allow yourself to be led.
That's amazing advice. And that's a great way to finish up this episode. I will listen to this, I know, over and over and over, and I do, because of just the amount of wisdom nuggets, is that a word? But that you've dropped here. I can't wait to see what happens with you in the next season. You're going to take it by force. You're so young still. You've got this amazing life ahead of you. And I believe that you're going to not only do big things for yourself, but also the vision you have for Gen Z is huge. And I believe that you'll create even greater leaders in the next generation than you have been. And you're going to just, the sense of pride you will feel over what is created, and all the time you're going to put in at the church and that you can devote to that. I think that's just so special. And I believe that's what will catapult Church for the City to a whole unique place, maybe than it's never been before.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that means a lot coming from someone like you. We value your family. We treasure you guys so much. And you are one of those people that Tyrone and I look ahead to and say, man, they have grown kids who are following Jesus, and they did something right. They did a lot of things right. So you and your entire family just mean so much to us, and know that, you know, we look to you guys for a lot of that and credit you guys for a lot of it. So we appreciate you guys and love you so much.
Thank you, Bosh. The feeling is so mutual. So, Karina, would you mind, just as we close out, just praying? I really do feel like that you never know where these podcasts wind up, who's going to listen and how it's going to get passed on or shared with someone else. And that someone could listen and just be hearing this and thinking, oh, it all sounds so good and I want to do that. But I just don't know if I have it in me. I think that you have such an anointing or a hand of God on your life for leadership and impartation of that leadership to other people, that you could have a very special prayer for people in closing.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Awesome. Lord, I thank you so much for this podcast and for Kay and for her just creating a space where people can come and not only learn, but be filled up, God. And we just ask for all the listeners that you reveal yourself to them, Lord, and in your revelation, you just give them a view and an understanding of the gifts that you have placed inside of them. Lord, open their eyes to see their own level of influence. Lord, boost up their confidence, God. I ask just for an increased measure of joy. If there's anybody who is listening that is feeling discouraged, I ask that you just give them your peace, that you just give them your joy. And Lord, that you begin to surround these listeners with good, godly people in their life who are going to lift them up, that you begin to direct them to people, Lord, who are going to come alongside them and not just lift them up, but help carry them forward. And Lord, we just ask for an extra dose of your wisdom, for an extra dose of vision, and just an extra dose of your Holy Spirit, God. And we just thank you so much for Kay again and her family. And as we just press into you, that you just reveal yourself through your word, and that we may we remember that everything that we do, no matter whether we're full-time at a church, full place in the marketplace, or even a younger listener, that everything that we do is all for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. It was great having you on here today. I loved every second. It goes by so fast.
It does.
The clock, and I'm like, how is this possible? But yeah, it happens, and it's just so awesome. I'm just so happy for you. I'm going to get to see you again in a week, so I'm excited about that. I love it that we're seeing each other more often. Mm-hmm. Very thankful that you said yes to be on Table Talks.
Oh, super grateful for this opportunity. We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kaywoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.